Tune in as author and publisher Joshua Schmoody and renowned talk show host Susan Brinder interview authors, artists, business entrepreneurs, political activists, musicians, and academics to discuss what it means to live the high life. A life of total abundance, joy, passion, and fulfillment. A life where your dreams become realities through the empowering medium of knowledge. Learn something new from book publishing and product distribution, public relations, to politics, psychology, and philosophy. If real-world knowledge interests you, then tune in and start living your higher life today. Hi, everyone. I'm Joshua Schmoody here with my co-host, Susan Brinder. And today we have a very special guest for you. We have Mr. Duncan on the line. Duncan, are you there?
Hello.
Yes. And Duncan, and let me just tell you a little bit about Duncan, because Duncan Wardell has ideas that are just out of this world. And, you know, on his website, it just says literally that he's really an amazing man. Now, he's the former vice president of innovation and creativity at the Walt Disney Company. And he also spent 25 years as his career at Disney developing some of the most innovative ideas and strategies, ideas that would forever change the way the company expands its impact, trains its employees, and solves problems creatively. So I want to welcome to the High Life Show, and thank you so much, Duncan, for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about Disney. You know, there was just an article in the paper that Disney's getting into the film business. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because you spent so many years and, you know, the company has evolved over the years. And one of the things that's happening is that they're going into the film business. But according to the newspaper today, the film business hasn't quite hit yet. They haven't been able to really succeed at making it into a business that they want. Now, what do you know about that? And if you've read the newspaper, do you think it's accurate?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. I think you said Disney's about to get into the film industry?
That's
correct.
I must have
read that wrong.
No, that is correct.
Okay, so Disney's been in film since 1929. That's what they were founded on.
Well, but this is now streaming. It's a streaming business
streaming
that they're
service.
Trying to get in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it launched yesterday. Disney Plus launched yesterday. And I think it's evolving, right? When you went to the movie theater for the very first time, and when you went to the movie theater last year, not much has changed. They've iterated. They haven't innovated. They've gone from one screen to multi-screens. They've gone from small screens to IMAX. But quite frankly, the experience, you go at the time they tell you. You sit in the seat they tell you. You have to watch the previews. You can't take in outside food and beverage. You can't engage. You can't participate. You can't. Right? The amount of things you can't do, that is an industry ripe for for innovation or quite frankly, dismantling. We said that the movie theaters would die when television came out. They didn't. We said the movie theaters would die when video came out. They didn't. Then we said they would die when DVDs came out. They didn't. Now people will say they'll die with streaming. It's not the technology that's going to kill the movie theaters. It's what technology has done in enabling cultural change. You and I, when we grew up, we went to sports events, we went to concerts, we went to theme parks, and we enjoyed the shared physical, emotional environment out of being alongside hundreds of thousands of other people. Generation Z does not. Generation Z does not. They are quite comfortable living in their bedrooms to a certain extent. They can order Uber Eats. They can play with their friends, real and virtual, in the same space. So that is a threat to anything physical, physical retail, physical shopping malls, physical theme parks, physical sporting arenas. And so I think Disney entering the streaming service is because they've recognized that's where it's heading.
Yeah. And what do you think about this digital age? Do you think that people, it's an advantage for young people to learn, to have an experience that's better than the experience that we had as kids?
Yes, I think a lot of people ask me, do we think we're killing creativity? Absolutely not. Look at Minecraft. Look at the video games that they're creating. I can choose my own character. I can dress myself. I can choose my own adventure. I can choose my challenges. I can choose my weapons. I could choose. I don't think it's killing creativity in children. Actually, if anything, I think it's inspiring. What's killing creativity in children is education. You, when you were a small girl or a small boy, and you got your big present for Christmas, right? It came in the biggest box ever. So let's say it was the bicycle, right? And you got the bicycle out of the box. It was a huge box. You put the bike over to the side. What did you spend the rest of the day playing with?
The box, of course.
You play with the box. Because the box could be anything you wanted it to be up until about the age of six when we go to school and we're told it's just a box. And our imagination at that moment in time starts to squash. You were born curious. You used to ask why, and why again. Then we get a job or we go to school and we're told there's only one right answer. And we stop asking the second why. The insight for innovation comes on the fourth or fifth why, and children know that. So that's why they keep pushing you till they get to the true insight. A lot of our research, in fact, even our data, even though it's getting better, sometimes stops at that first or second why. If you ask somebody why they go to Disney, they'll tell you to go for the ride. Well, that tells me to spend millions of dollars on a new capital investment strategy. But if you pause for a moment and act childlike, not childish, and say, well, why do you go for the rides? Well, I like Small World. Why is that important to you? I used to go with my mum. Why is that important to you? I remember the music. Why is that important? I take my daughter now. What that person has told you on the third or fourth why is actually it's all about her memory and her nostalgia. So that's a communication campaign, not a capital investment strategy. We're all born with amazing intuition. You have 100 billion neurons in your brain. You have 100 million neurons in your stomach. Most of the choices we make as consumers and as business people, what clothes you wear, what car you buy, how you commute, which restaurant you go to, which hotel, what brands you choose to engage with, are made through our second brain, our gut. And we say, we went with our gut. We're born with an amazing imagination. We all still have one. Here's the challenge. We've been told for so many years they weren't important. It was all about critical thinking, strategy, planning, and analysis. And those have been the skill sets that dominated the last two decades, and rightly so. Here's the thing. Think about the next decade ahead. Artificial intelligence will rip apart finance jobs, analysis jobs, critical thinking jobs, planning jobs, legal jobs. The only thing artificial intelligence won't be able to replace in the next decade are the four traits that we're all born with: creativity, imagination, curiosity, and intuition. You can't program creativity. And so the skill sets that we've put to the side will actually be some of the strongest in the next decade simply because they can't be programmed. But education is killing them. We must now prepare our children for jobs that don't exist yet. Well, so do you think history and English literature is going to help them? No, of course it's not. So actually, going back to your question about gaming, think about the gaming unit. Surgeons now essentially are performing surgery through essentially the same gaming skills that children learn. So no, I think it's education that's killing creativity.
Speaking of gaming, I wanted to interject here, Susan, if I may. And I'm sure a lot of my millennial friends want to know this too. I don't know if you know anything about it or not, but I know that Disney got into the video game industry a while back, but one of their biggest hits was Kingdom Hearts. Are you familiar with that game, Duncan?
I remember it. I left the company two or three years ago, so it's not something I'm that familiar with at the moment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just going to ask what, if any, were the plans that they had to continue that series?
Yeah, I couldn't speculate on that. I don't work for them anymore. I left. I was there 30 years, and people say, why did you leave? You're head of innovation and creativity. I left because there's an enormous gap in the market. We're all talking, we need innovation. You must disrupt. We must think different. We need to innovate. And all the C-suite, you can't talk people through culture change. People have to want to do it when you're not around. And I noticed this huge gap in the market. All the C-suites are telling us we need to innovate, but nobody's showing us how. And I thought, gosh, what if I could take my experience from 10 years as head of innovation creativity at Disney and create an innovation toolkit that makes innovation easy, creativity tangible, and the process fun? Companies hate the word fun, but guess what? Fred and Sally, who work for you for a year or 20 years, they're good people. They have no incentive to use that toolkit when you're not around unless it's easy, tangible, and fun. It's a huge gap in the market. And so now most of my work is going inside companies and giving them a common language and a common toolkit around innovation, creativity, and design thinking that their employees want to use.
You know, it's very interesting. I don't know if you know about the Edison Awards, but many years ago I attended as a press person the Edison Awards, and you saw the most incredible innovations, and people were talking about their innovations, and they were studying, and they were doing all kinds of research, and MIT was one of the universities that was represented in that, and it's so funny. It reminded me of years and years ago, Duncan, when my parents got a new television and everybody in the neighborhood jumped in and wanted to watch the television. But there was like a very wonderful way to communicate. It was tête-à-tête. People talked about it. People shared their ideas and their imagination about television. But do they share today? Because it seems like everybody is sort of independently doing their thing and not being like a community anymore.
Sorry, can you repeat the question? I didn't completely understand it.
Well, what I'm just saying is that because of the new way that we do our innovative or creative work is all alone. We do it all alone. We're not part of like a community of people who share their ideas or their innovations and kind of have those kinds of relationships.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure I agree. I mean, look at WeWork. WeWork is a call, again, from this younger generation of entrepreneurs who are all sitting together. And I asked one chap, I said, why do you work? He said, well, he said, there's a finance guy down the hall here. There's a legal girl up the hall. And I can, you know, I can borrow from their skill sets. So, no, I think, and here's the thing, online is allowing people to collaborate like they never have before. And I think the future of innovation will be online collaboration. And to create challenges against real challenges like poverty or lack of food. I think online collaboration with the software that we now have and the ability to connect, whether it's through Google Hangouts, whether it's through Sling, through whatever the technology is bringing the world closer together. And I think in many ways will make it far more collaborative and easy to work on innovation projects together.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Kickstarter. This is people coming from around the world to fund something that they're particularly passionate about.
Sure.
I think one of the biggest challenges I think is going to face companies in the next decade is companies who don't understand or don't have a purpose. And most companies don't. They don't know what it means. They think it's a philanthropic cause or a charity. It's not. It's what do you stand for? So, for example, Apple's purpose is we help the world think different. Well, how do we do that? We make great products and services. People have bought into the Apple purpose. And so people often ask me, well, make purpose tangible for me. Well, the example I give was I was recently asked to give a talk to the world's largest manufacturer of tools. But I don't know anything. I didn't know anything about the tool industry. So I decided to go down and watch their consumer inside Home Depot and Lowe's at the point of purchase. And and what I learned and what I heard, I went back to the reports of this brand and I said, look, this Generation Z, they're not talking about your brand, your tools or your price point. They're talking about what's important to them. We're going to build our dream bathroom, our dream kitchen, we're going to build our dream house. I said, your purpose, if you choose to create it, is you could be the brand who helps people build their dreams. And you could see the finance guys rolling their eyes saying, how's that going to help me deliver my quarterly results? It's not, but it might save your job. And here's why. If you're the brand who can help people build their dreams, what industries could you be in? You could be in sports, entertainment, hospitality, banking, finance, insurance. You could be in any industry you want. But no, they're in the tool business. They make tools. And we're going to sell our tools into order to meet our quarterly results. We're going to expand into Mexico and India. They have a growing middle class. They'll buy our tools. No, they won't. Just as India bypassed the laptop computer and went straight to mobile phones, they will be bypassing tools and going straight to 3D printing. Amazon spent billions of dollars on shipping last year. It is in Amazon's best interest that we all have a 3D printer in our house a decade from now. Think of the money they'll save on storage, packaging, and production. I put it to you that 35% of what you buy on Amazon today, you'll print in your living room 10 to 15 years from today, and then you will no longer require a hammer, a chisel, or a saw. So yes, they'll meet their quarterly results for the next 3 to 5 years, and then they'll be gone simply because they didn't have a purpose. And Generation Z, not only will they not buy your products and services if they don't believe in what you stand for, they don't want to work for you either. Well, how the hell are you going to remain relevant 10 years from today if people don't want to work for you?
Well, you brought up something very interesting. It's like when you think about people who are trying to plan their future, And I'm talking about young people today who are maybe in high school or in college, and they're thinking, what should I do in the future? What should I study? What would be the advantage for me to, say, study philosophy or to study any kind of thing in liberal arts? It sounds like from what you're saying is that when they try to do what they have to do, which is to say, do what makes them feel passionate, that's not going to work for them. They have to do something that is totally innovative.
Disagree. Do what you love, and do what you love, and you'll be really good at it. I was terrible at math. I'm not in finance for a reason. I was full of ideas. I ended up leading ideas for the Walt Disney Company. Education, MBAs, useless. How is an MBA preparing anybody for the future if we're teaching them the same way we taught them 20 years ago? Creative problem solving. That's what people need to a certain extent. Give them a creative problem solving kit that they can use against any particular challenge. Make it tangible, easy, and fun. Education is a disaster. Look at the amount of kids who aren't going to university. Look at the kids who have their own YouTube following or Instagram following. They're not following the traditional model. They're doing what they're passionate about, and because they're passionate about it, they'll be really good at it. You want to? If you love flying, be a pilot. If you love acting, go be an actor. Whatever you're passionate about, is to say, look, it's common sense, right? Whatever was your favorite subject at school was the subject you were best in. Whatever the subject you hated, you were worst in. Guess what? It applies to life as well. I think the one thing I did give a talk about last, I gave a TED talk down in Miami last weekend, and I talked about marketing will be dead in less than 10 years. I firmly believe it. And we're about to go into the decade of the experience economy. What do I mean by the experience economy? Experience is called, marketing implies the word at, right? You can't build a relationship. You don't build one-way relationships. You build two-way relationships. That means engaging and immersing with by creating experiences. Walt wasn't an idiot. On July 17th, 1955, he built the most successful per square foot retail shopping mall on the planet. It's called Disneyland. Guess what? Nobody thinks of it as a shopper. Because Walt said, I'm going to create an experience first. And so many brands haven't created an experience. Starbucks has created an experience. Apple has created an experience. You're buying the experience. You're not buying the products and services. Physical retail will die if it continues to believe that it's all about per sales per square foot and not creating an experience first. So an example of that is obviously Disneyland, but so, you know, think about Walt. When he was inside the movie theater, when he only had movies, you know, he was constrained. He wanted it to mist during drip, drip, drip with labor showers in Fantasia. He wanted heat pumped in during Night on a Bear Mountain, and the theater owner said no. So Walt said, okay, I'm going to create my own environment. So what if my movies weren't two-dimensional? What if I made them three-dimensional? Well, if I make them three-dimensional, I'll have to have people play the characters. Well, if I have people play the characters, Cinderella couldn't live next to Davy Crockett. She'd need to live in a different area. Oh, I know, I'll call it Disneyland. And he completely re-engineered the experience for the consumer and created. So he used to say Sunday was Daddy's Day. And he used to go down to the park with his two little girls, and he would sit on the bench and watch them play on the seesaws and the swings. And he said, I want to create an experience where families can come together and play together. And here's where Disney Plus is really closing that gap. So why is Mickey Mouse still alive? Why is Popeye dead? Why is Barney the dinosaur dead? Thank God he is. Why is Wile E. Coyote dead? Why is Snoopy dead? Why are they all? Because Walt gave Mickey a place. Walt gave his brand a place where you could come and touch and feel and play with the brand. The Disney parks an experience which because I'm fully immersed in it, makes me want to buy more consumer products, go watch more movies, and subscribe to Disney Plus. Disney Plus is now closing the loop on the consumer, because you may only go to a Disney park every 3 or 4 years. You may go to a movie 4 or 5 times a year. You may go to a Disney store once or twice a year. No, now we're coming to you. So what Disney is saying is, we're going to create this 360-degree relationship with our consumer that lasts a lifetime. Most brands are only in it for quarterly results. They don't understand the benefit of the long-term lifetime relationship to their guests.
Well, I have to tell you something. It's very interesting that you talked about Disney again and how it draws people in. You know, my son is I guess he's past millennium already, but he and his wife, and of course I have a grandson as well who's a baby, they spend so much time in Disney Disneyland that it shocks me. But you see that brand that you were talking about, that Disney brand, they're in love with it. Their feelings about it, I can't even describe. It's almost like it's not an inanimate object. It's like a real thing to them. And they bring the baby there because they want the baby to enjoy it as well. So walk us through for the second. What are we going to see in a Disneyland or a Disney World in the future? What is it going to
come? I can't speculate on that. I'm no longer with the company. I can tell you theme parks of the future. So, for example, I think there are certain, this shared experience, but also technology keeping people at home now. What does that mean for the future of sports? There was an article in the New York Times last weekend about the demise of the NFL. It's because they're not creating it and turning it into experience. I was asked recently to do some work for a major beer company. They want to create more sales. And I said to them, at the moment, you're just a product. You sit on a shelf. I can walk up and down the supermarket. I'll choose you based on the color of the label, how many calories you are, and what the price point is. That's the only decision making I put into it. But how might we lean into the experience economy? And if you, again, watch your consumers, the 21-year-olds, where are they going? They're going to speakeasies. These speakeasies are popping up all over the place now. So how might we create a speakeasy where people could come in? It's a 1920s prohibition bar. Everything's retrofitted. And even right down to the cast member behind the bar, he or she can't talk about 1929 and the Wall Street crash because it hasn't happened yet. So he wouldn't know about it yet. And you completely immerse people in an experience where they could come and touch and feel and play with your brand as Walt did on July 17, 1955. That is the only thing that will keep most of the major brands alive. It's also re-expressing and thinking about things differently. So, for example, Walt said, we won't have any customers in our park. We'll only have guests. Well, think about how you feel when you're treated as a customer versus a guest. Walt said, we won't have any employees in our park. We'll only have cast members. And with that, completely re-express the challenge. Most of the major manufacturers of cars in the United States of America today think they make cars, hardware products. That'll put them out of business in less than 10 years. Because look at Tesla. They don't think of it as a car. It's a software product. And that, will they have to build a new car? See, the other car companies have to create new models every 2 to 3 years to keep you buying them. Tesla just has to update the software. It's genius. They just don't think of them. And for the car companies, they've been so successful in one model for 100 years, they can't find their way out. Now you've got companies like Google and Apple coming in saying, guess what? We don't know how to make a car. So we're not constrained by all the turf, the politics, and the way we've done business for the last 100 years. By the way, we think it's a software product, not a hardware product. And they'll dominate the automotive industry in the next. I mean, where do I think the cars will be going? I think it'll be a shared economy. We'll have one car. It'll be sort of like a Lyft without a driver. It'll pick me up and drop me off at my office, go and pick you up because your house is near my office. It'll drop you at your place of work. It'll go on and pick somebody else up, drop them their piece of. And so, but it'll also be where we can get into that also. The car is already pre-programmed to pick me up at my address at 6:33 p.m. I get in. There's no steering wheel. Don't need a steering wheel. but I can opt in to the social network of the city. And because I've opted in, the car knows it's my anniversary, clearly knows I've forgotten, knows my wife's best favorite flowers are sunflowers, knows where the florist is, texts the florist automatically on my behalf, says, have you got any sunflowers? Yes. Comes back and says, do you want to stop here on the way home? Bang. That's the future of what was the car industry.
Right. And let me interject here, Susan. One thing I wanted to ask, you said the future of marketing was dead. What do you mean by that, one? And where do you see the future of marketing going?
It's gone. They just don't realize it yet. So here's the thing. So we grew up, right, watching advertisements on television, listening to them on the radio and seeing them in the newspaper. This generation didn't. And they don't like, so we use the word, I hear marketeers say, let's disrupt people. People don't want to be disrupted. They're in their social feed, enjoying great content. Now, do I think through data and getting to know our consumer better, we will be able to serve up more and more relevant and customized products in the future that will be more relevant? Yes, I think that will be the piece of marketing that survives. But all the rest of it, no. It's about, if you create a great experience, for your guests, for your consumers, they will come back, right? So why do you think people keep going to Disneyland, right?
Yeah.
So it's about creating an experience. Because see, if I create an experience with you and for you that completely immerses you in my brand, it does exactly what Susanna said. It is her son and takes her grandson, because it's an experience. They're not being marketed at, they're enjoying an experience. And the experience economy is, so for example, will museums survive? No, probably not. But if they were, you know, augmented reality has been around for a decade. Have any of them invested in it yet? No. But what if Vincent van Gogh could pop out of the painting right in front of me on my phone, tell me why he painted his painting, and tell me why he cut off his ear? Yeah, I'm going. Right? No, seriously, cool. How much more? Right? Well, so I saw a little boy in Belgium earlier this year walk up to a painting in a museum and try and swipe it.
No kidding. That's unbelievable. You know, something, another thing I wanted to say to you, you mentioned Google, for example. Now, they're getting so much information about each individual, learning, I mean, everything that a person is about. And that's dangerous, don't you think? I mean, if for example, they're dealing with hospitals or they're dealing with doctors, what happens is they get all this information, but what about the HIPAA laws? What are they going to know about?
There's going to be the ongoing debate between privacy and value, right? So let me try and articulate this in a way in which I believe it. So in 2011, just as Walt had said, instead of calling us employees, called cast members, in 2011, and here's the challenge for most companies. Most companies still ask the question every morning, how might we make more money? If they continue to ask that question, they're going out of business. Why? Because it means they're more absorbed with their quarterly results than they are about their consumer. And their consumer is demanding that they change into a consumer-centric culture. So in 2011, instead of saying, how might we make more money, Disney asked the question, how might we solve the biggest consumer pain point? Well, we know the biggest consumer pain point is standing in line. So Disney looked around, found RFID technology, which has existed for a long time, created Disney's Magic Band. And now when you go to a Disney park, you have between 60 and 90 minutes free time a day that you didn't have 5 years ago. Well, what has that resulted in? Record revenues on food and beverage, record revenues on merchandise. Data collection, millions of visitors every year are telling Disney live. They are crowdsourcing live the future design of the products and services Disney will create. Why? Because Disney offers them something of great value in return. So it's not just, can I have your data? It's what am I going to do with it? I'm going to make my parts better for you and make them more customized for you. And all, by the way, you don't have to stand in line anymore. Here, have my data. So yes, there needs to be better protection in place for the consumer. But I sit on the side of the fence is if I've done something wrong, then I should be going to jail. Right. And if I haven't done anything wrong, and I use Clear when I move through the airport. They've got a retina scan and a fingerprint. Could it be stolen by somebody else? Yes. Am I prepared to make the trade to not stand in line when I go through the airport because I think it's offering me something of real value? Yes. Look, it's coming. It's facial recognition. By the way, at the ripe old age of 50, if I didn't have to remember another bloody password because somebody gave me facial recognition technology or a fingerprint, I'd take it in a heartbeat.
There you go. Well, we always like to give our guests the last word. So if there's something that you'd like to tell them, please do it now if you don't mind.
Do what you love and you'll never work another day of your life.
Our guest today has been a very interesting guest with lots and lots of information. His name is Duncan Wardell. And Duncan, if they want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
DuncanWardell.com is probably the easiest way. DuncanWardle.com.
And what's in store for the next, let's call it the next decade. Anything going to happen with Duncan Wardell in the near future that is different from what he's doing now?
Well, I lived in a corporate world for 30 years where I picked up my paycheck every week. And now I get to go around the world. And I threw myself off a cliff. I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but I'm very passionate about my desire to help other people think differently. And you know, so now for the next 4 weeks, I'll be in Europe all next week. I'm in the Middle East the week after that. The week after that, I'm in India and Kathmandu, Nepal, giving a workshop to a very, very special gentleman And I can't wait to get there. I am now getting to give back 30 years of Disney experience, and I get to give it back now. And that is a real, real pleasure, a treasure. The amount of notes I get from people which are saying I've changed their lives, I've helped them think differently, is better than any corporate paycheck.
Sounds fantastic. Well, our guest today again, Duncan Wardell, and I want to thank you so much for being on our show, The High Life, and close up, if you will, Josh.
Yes, thank you again, Duncan, for being on. It was a pleasure having you. And remember, guys, knowledge is power. Thanks and take care.
Three, two, one.
The High Life Show and media by which it is distributed hold no responsibility for the validity or accuracy of information on this site. Listeners and viewers are advised to seek the input of a professional whom represent the subject before acting on any information or advice. The High Life Show and media by which it is distributed hold no responsibility for the validity or accuracy of information on this site or podcast. Listeners and viewers are advised to seek the input of a professional whom represents the subject before acting on any information or advice. Thank you.